Good morning, everyone, and welcome to HN Pod. It is Tuesday, December 31st, 2025. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Mike. This is episode 262, and frankly, I can't believe we made it to the end of the year. Happy New Year's Eve, Sarah.
Happy New Year's Eve to you too, Mike. It has been a wild year for tech, and fittingly, we are closing it out with a set of stories that really encapsulate where we are right now. The tension between human craft and AI automation, deep engineering wisdom, and some actual hard science to round things out.
Yeah, the lineup today is almost poetic for a year-end review. We've got a massive new tool for querying the internet's collective intelligence, a personal story about rejecting the AI hype cycle in publishing, a philosophical look at industrial software, some timeless laws of spacecraft design, and a breakthrough in carbon capture.
It's a packed show. Let's dive right into the top story, which is a Show HN project that's getting a lot of love. It's called Use Claude Code to Query 600 Gigabyte Indexes over Hacker News, Archive, etc.
This is by a user named Ira, and it's essentially a power tool for researchers. We talk a lot about RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation, but this feels a little more hardcore. It's called Alignment Scry. Basically, they've indexed about 60 million documents, including archive papers, the entirety of Hacker News, Less Wrong, and the Alignment Forum.
Right, but what makes this different from just asking ChatGPT a question is the control it gives you. The tool allows you to use Claude to generate arbitrary SQL and vector algebra queries. So instead of a black box giving you a summary, you have an LLM acting as a translator, turning your natural language into a precise database query.
Exactly. One of the top comments by a user named Barish Namazov really nailed this. They said, "I like that this relies on generating SQL rather than just being a black box chatbot. It feels like the right way to use LLMs for research, as a translator from natural language to a rigid query language."
It's that distinction between the LLM being the database versus the LLM querying the database. The author, Zyra, gave a really interesting example of what you can do with this. They mentioned you can do compositional vector search. For instance, you can search for the FTX crisis minus guilt tone minus guilt topic to find writing about the FTX collapse that is distinctly devoid of moralizing or guilty tones.
That is fascinating. It's like doing math with concepts.
There was also a user, Nathan F77, who took this for a spin immediately. He's working on a toy string theory project and used the tool to search for a Calabi Yau manifold. He actually found that a group at Wisconsin had done almost exactly what he was attempting back in 2019.
Which is both a triumph of search and a tragedy for his side project.
Totally. But he said it saved him immense time. He also noted that the tool found papers where the terminology was different, but the math was the same, which is something keyword search struggles with.
I do have to mention the safety aspect. The author warns that for maximum ergonomics, you might run this with dangerously skip permissions, but that exposes you to prompt injection attacks if one of the ingested documents has malicious instructions. It's the classic 2025 dilemma, convenience versus security.
Always. But for a researcher trying to synthesize 20 years of archive papers and HN comments, this looks like a superpower.
Moving from high-tech research to a very human story, our next article is a blog post by Austin Z. Henley titled, "I Canceled My Book Deal."
This one hit a nerve on HN. Austin is an associate teaching professor at CMU. He has a popular blog where he builds things like compilers and browsers from scratch. A big publisher approached him to write a book based on those tutorials.
It sounds like the dream, right? But the process turned into a nightmare. He details how the publisher wanted him to dumb everything down. They wanted to strip out his personal voice. They even asked him to add a chapter on Intro to Python just to broaden the market, even though the book was about building a compiler.
The Intro to Python request is such a red flag. It's pure checklist publishing. But the real deal breaker, and this is so 2025, was the AI mandate.
Yeah. The publisher came back to him and said, "The powers that be are requiring AI to be part of every book." Austin refused. He offered compromises, like a note on how to use AI for debugging, but they essentially told him, "All our future books will involve AI."
So he walked away. He canceled the deal. And I think that resonates with so many people right now. There's this fatigue with having AI shoehorned into places where the human element is the whole point.
There was a great discussion in the comments about this. A user named Croat asked the devil's advocate question, "Why buy this book when ChatGPT can generate the same tutorial?" And the answer they gave was curation. You buy a book because an expert has designed a coherent narrative path. ChatGPT might hallucinate a step or give you a hello world version, but a book like Austin guides you from zero to a working compiler.
There's also the issue of soul. Another commenter mentioned that their brother-in-law started using ChatGPT to punch up personal letters, and they turned into excerpts from lesser 70s sitcoms, just disturbingly soulless.
That is bleak.
It is, but it highlights why Austin's decision matters. If we automate the teaching of craft, do we lose the craft itself? Austin is now self-publishing, by the way, releasing chapters as he finishes them.
Which ties perfectly into our next story, actually. It's a post by Chris Loy titled "The Rise of Industrial Software."
This is a bit of a philosophical companion piece to the book deal story. Chris argues that software production is undergoing its own industrial revolution. For decades, coding was a craft, expensive, slow, requiring high skill. Now, with AI coding agents, we are moving toward mass production.
He uses the term disposable software, the idea that because code is becoming so cheap to produce, we'll see a flood of single-use applications. He compares it to how industrial agriculture gave us ultra-processed food, or how digital sensors gave us user-generated video at scale.
Right. He mentions vibe coding, where you just kind of gesture at what you want and the AI builds it. The code quality might be terrible, but if it works for the 5 minutes you need it, does it matter?
It's the Jevons paradox applied to code. As coding becomes more efficient, we won't code less. We'll just consume vastly more code. But Chris raises a worry about the pollution of this ecosystem. Technical debt is the pollution of the digital world. If we have billions of lines of unmaintained, AI-generated slop, who stewards that?
That's the trillion-dollar question. There was some pushback in the comments, though. A user named WJW argued that software is already industrial. We use the same compilers, the same libraries, the same CI/CD pipelines. He argues that developers are more like architects making blueprints for the factory, the compiler.
That's a fair point, but I think Chris is talking about the generation of the logic itself. If I can say, make me a Flappy Bird clone, but the bird is a taco, and I get it in 30 seconds, that is a fundamental shift in the economics of software.
It is, and just like we still have a market for handmade furniture or bespoke suits, Chris thinks organic software, human-written code, will become a niche luxury or a mark of high reliability.
Which brings us to a domain where reliability is the only thing that matters, space. Our next item is a classic PDF that resurfaced, Aiken's Laws of Spacecraft Design.
Oh, I love these. This is from David Aiken, a professor at the University of Maryland. It's a list of about 40 aphorisms about engineering, but they apply to so much more than just rockets.
They are incredibly quotable. Law number one, engineering is done with numbers. Analysis without numbers is only an opinion.
Brutal, but true. My favorite has to be law 20. A bad design with a good presentation is doomed eventually. A good design with a bad presentation is doomed immediately.
That one sparked a huge discussion. It's terrifying, isn't it? You can have the best solution in the world, but if you can't communicate it to the people holding the purse strings, it dies on the vine.
There was a great comment by a user named PJ Desnoe that illustrated how engineering mindset works. They told a story about modem development in the 80s and 90s. Engineers spent years trying to optimize analog signals over phone lines, hitting a wall at about 33.6 kilobits per second.
And then what happened?
Well, someone realized that while the last mile to your house was analog, the rest of the phone network was digital. By treating the connection as a digital stream rather than an analog wave, they unlocked 56K modems. It was a paradigm shift, realizing the constraints weren't what they thought they were.
That fits perfectly with Aiken's Law 12. There is never a single right solution. There are always multiple wrong ones, though.
Exactly. These laws are worth reading for anyone building anything, software or hardware. Design is an iterative process. The necessary number of iterations is one more than the number you have currently done.
Words to live by. All right, let's bring it back down to earth. Literally. Our final story is some promising news from the University of Helsinki. Efficient method to capture carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
This is some genuine hard science. Researchers developed a new method using a superbase alcohol compound. The headline number is that 1 gram of this stuff can absorb 156 milligrams of CO2 directly from the air.
And the critical part is the energy efficiency.
Current direct air capture, DAC, methods often require heating the material to 900 degrees Celsius to release the trapped CO2 so you can store it. This new compound releases the CO2 at just 70 degrees Celsius.
That is a massive difference. 70 degrees is waste heat territory. You could run this off the exhaust of another industrial process.
However, the HN comments provided the necessary reality check. User Peter Holsworth pointed out the fundamental physics problem. CO2 is only 0.04.
There was a funny back and forth about how to solve this. Someone jokingly suggested, why don't we just release more nitrogen and oxygen to dilute the CO2?
Which, as others pointed out, would require increasing the mass of the Earth's atmosphere by 50%, crushing us all under the pressure. So probably better to stick with the super-base alcohol method.
Probably. But it's good to see innovation on the chemistry side. If we can get the energy costs down, direct air capture becomes a much more viable piece of the climate puzzle.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that while software eats the world, physics and chemistry still run it.
Well said. And that brings us to the end of our show and the end of 2025.
It's been a pleasure dissecting the news with you this year, Sarah. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Whether you're an industrial software engineer, a spacecraft designer, or just someone trying to avoid AI slop, we appreciate you.
We'll be back tomorrow to kick off 2026. Until then, have a safe and happy new year.
Happy New Year.